So when was your last checkup? Oh no, not you. Although that's important too, but when was your last vehicle checkup? When it comes to service, nobody knows your Chevy better than your local Chevy dealer. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule an appointment today.
Monday. Thanks for joining us here on WGN. Anna DeVlantis here. A lot going on, a lot to talk about. And before we get to something, a few things that you just heard at the top of the hour in Steve Bertrand's news, Amy Klobuchar dropping out and the coronavirus, the fourth case here in Illinois, not entirely unexpected because it is the wife of the third case. We'll get to that. I just want to mention this, though. Did you see this? Tom Skilling posted on Facebook over the weekend. And he says he's having gastric bypass surgery. So send some good thoughts and well wishes to Tom. He says he hates missing work and he knows that people might be wondering where he is and decided I'm going to post it online because then people won't be left wondering. He says expect 4 to 6 weeks for me for gastric bypass, but sometimes it's less than that. So fingers crossed. I'm sure you know that gastric bypass surgery, he writes in this Facebook post, is a weight loss procedure. As anyone who struggled to get weight off and keep it off, you realize at some point there are some people who just need to go beyond merely dieting. So there you go. Some well wishes and a speedy recovery to Tom Skilling. That post, by the way, already 13,000 comments from people just saying, hey, we support you, Tom, and hope to see you back in the weather chair soon. I don't know, Steve, you ever talked to him about this, but he's very open about his battles over the years with weight and diet. He had a personal trainer for some time. He was trying so hard to eat healthy and just trying to get some of the weight off. But this, he says, was necessary. He ends with the Facebook comment, a quintessentially Tom Skilling kind of comment. Believe me, I'll no doubt end up crawling up the walls waiting my return to work.
I don't know. That's going to be the hardest part for him.
He's going to be doing the weather from wherever he is recovering. You know it. He'll be just like checking in and posting and looking at his weather models and stuff. And that's who he is.
Well, we certainly wish him well because I know it's a difficult procedure.
Yes, it is. And it's great that he kind of went public with that right up front. And, you know, maybe that always helps other people just sort of coming out and talking about it. And good for him. Good for him. I want to turn to that news, though, too, because I know we just found out about the fourth coronavirus case here in Illinois. Is she asymptomatic? She's the wife of the third case that we just found out about in Arlington Heights, right?
I don't know if she's asymptomatic, but she's not sick enough to be hospitalized. So she's quarantined at home.
She's at home. And
right.
The third case. Do we know anything, Steve, about the background on that? Is there
we know they're
travel
both,
plans or anything? Or where they've traveled, anything like that?
Well, the hospital's holding a news conference, I think, right about now. And the governor's going to talk at 2:30 as well. But I don't know about their travel, but I know they're both in their 70s.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we'll wait and keep you posted as we hear more about that. We're going to also talk to a pulmonologist and a critical care specialist at Northwestern about the coronavirus, but also the flu. We're having an especially harsh flu season here in Illinois and something that's not getting that much attention because of the coronavirus, particularly children hard hit. So
it's weird, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? We've had a month that's really been devastating.
But
with
we wig out about something that, you know, is probably not going to, well, certainly going to impact many fewer of us than the actual flu. And we don't pay much attention to the actual flu.
Here's something we should all pay attention to, because I agree with you, Steve. It's just the prevention measures we should all take. They're pretty darn similar, aren't they? Just swabbing things down, keeping yourself as healthy as you can, and you know, cleaning, deep cleaning. Have you ever done a deep clean?
No, I'm afraid. I don't want to know what that is.
You hear the health officials stand up at the podium and say, well, it'd be a good idea if all schools and public buildings do a deep clean. I was like, what is a deep clean? What does that entail? And we've got a guy who's here. His company has been doing deep cleans for really generations. So he can tell us what that is. Think about all the public places that people touch. So think about this for a second. When you think of the germiest place in the office, Steve, what do you think it is?
The germiest place in the office? I would have to say the computer keyboard.
Yeah, I mean, that might be up there. The bathroom is where many people's minds go first, and it's not the bathroom necessarily, though there are germs there. But there are issues with wherever people touch that doesn't normally get cleaned. So you think about door handles and doorknobs that might not always get cleaned or swabbed, and people are touching them over and over, and the keyboard is probably among that.
My favorite thing is in the winter when it's cold out, you know, because if you can catch it from other people's breath, right? And so you're standing on the L platform in really cold weather, and you see people exhale and see how far that cloud goes.
Yeah, it gives you an idea. Have you ever seen that YouTube video of the sneeze in slow motion? They show the particles and it can go like 10 feet or something.
No,
it's like, oh, you never see a sneeze in the same way again. But that just, you know, just shows you there are traces of germs everywhere, but there are places that you may want to swab down and places that you might want to remember. Light switches, another one. Light switches, place to sort of get your Clorox wipes out if you want to be doing that.
I can't stop touching my face now that you're talking.
That's the other thing, right? They say we're touching our face and our hands aren't clean because your hands are pretty darn germy. If you have an idea about how you clean, let us know some things that you might do that keep the germs away. 708, drag your fingernails through the soap bar. It gets them clean underneath. Never done that before, but that's a good idea. Some ideas there. We'll have many more for you as our deep cleaning expert will be here. He's got this backpack with him. I'm not sure exactly what it is. And he's got the black light as well that he shines on things. So he's going to take a real hard look at the studio and then swab things down here. I'm curious to know where he is going to find the most germs because the microphone cover might be one spot. You know, we all sort of spit when you talk a little bit. It's in there. The keyboard might be another. But all the communal places where people touch are.
Do you have your own headphones?
I do, but I don't always bring them, and I'm wearing the communal ones today.
So I wear the communal headphones, too, which has got to be really a dumb thing to do.
Let's get the black light on those.
Right.
See what you see there. See what you see, because it's going to be eye-opening, I think. Eye-opening. Desk phones, another one. And elevator buttons. How about that? Elevator buttons. Did those get cleaned? I don't know. And then your desk surfaces. I think that's a common place we all think of. We just sort of, you know, take a look at that. He's also going to answer your questions about Lysol, Clorox. A lot of people wondering, can it really clean what we think? Is it really doing a good job against the flu and the coronavirus? He'll talk about that, too. And the market sounds like it is rebounding a bit, though, today, Steve. It's a couple after a week and a half.
Yeah, it is. Be careful of the terminology because it's dropped off of a 20-story building and it's bounced up a half a story. You know,
yeah.
I mean, we lost well over 1,000 points last week.
Or what's it up now?
4,000 points. It's up about 750 points.
Got it. Yeah.
So we're not back to where we started the last week at, but it's going in the right direction.
Yeah, it certainly is. And part of that due to the Fed, of course, their hope there's pressure on the Fed to make some interest rate moves. And we're going to talk about that with our financial expert, Jonathan Honig, coming up as well. Oh, someone else, 847. Yep, the elevator button. That's exactly what I was thinking. The copier machine. That's true. When does that get cleaned? Does that ever get cleaned? I don't know.
That's why I stopped sending faxes.
Who are you sending faxes to? I don't want to know. And then another person, 847, I have friends in Japan. All of the schools are closed for the month of March due to the coronavirus. I had heard that. They closed all of them just as a precautionary measure. They're doing e-learning in a lot of cases, learning from home on your computer and that kind of thing. And that's what they're doing. But we'll talk about that. And then, of course, just lastly, did want to mention the two Midwesterners are out of the race for president. Amy Klobuchar announcing after Pete Buttigieg made his announcement last night. She just didn't see the path for her, and she's out. A couple people saying on our text line maybe she'd make a VP candidate.
Well, she's going to be quick to endorse Joe Biden. She's flying down to meet him in Dallas for a rally tonight.
Oh, well, we'll wait and see what happens there. So we've got Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, Bloomberg, and Elizabeth Warren. Am I missing anybody?
And I think that's probably it, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, our deep cleaning expert is here, followed by our doctor.
Tulsi Gabbard.
Tulsi Gabbard is still in.
She is.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's where that sits. And more to come here on WGN Radio. Anna DeVellantis here on WGN. Thanks for being with us on this Monday. 1:17 is the time. 630, I try to wipe down my steering wheel from time to time. Yeah, another place we forget about. We were saying the door handles, the elevator buttons, the kinds of things that everybody touches, but you sort of feel like you forget to clean. Those are some of the things we're going to be talking with. Our germ and cleaning, deep cleaning expert here on WGN. Germs on the debit and credit card machines or ATM machines. That's something else. Or pens when you have to sign and CC a receipt. Yuck, just think about that. If Rich got his black light out on over that, we'd wonder what we'd see there. Speaking of germy places, have you ever thought about the magazines in the doctor's office? Yeah, right. all the sick people going in, or the toys in the pediatrician's office. I think a lot of pediatricians do sanitize those. I do think that. But, you know, stuff to be aware of and much more, too. So keep the comments coming. We've got Rich Kurkowski here in studio. But first this, time for Rich Kurkowski. Sorry about that, Rich. You are with Stratus Building Solutions, and you do deep cleanings all the time. You have been doing them for a long time.
That's correct.
Tell us what that means. We're hearing that now they're asking public buildings and schools and all that kind of thing. Hey, it's probably a good idea. Go out there and do a deep clean. What does that mean?
Yeah, so we do it in two contexts, really. So a lot of times when we first come in and start cleaning for a particular facility, we find it's been kind of neglected or subpar cleaning for a while. So what we're doing is we're going through and pretty much cleaning every surface of that building. I mean, I actually look around here. Your office is very clean compared to a lot
of the
offices.
You think so? Oh, yeah. Good to know. How can you tell just looking?
Just looking. I mean, a lot of, you know, places we would see layers of dust on, you know, the monitor holder you got there, behind, you know, desk, behind outlets, things like that. So, I mean, one component is just cleaning. You know, it's kind of like washing your hands. Even if you're not using a disinfectant, you're using soap, you're using water, you're cleaning your hands. So that's kind of the first element to any kind of cleaning plan we would have, is just getting surfaces clean. And then beyond that is where you start to talk about disinfecting. And that's something we've been doing a lot more of lately. I did bring a backpack here.
Yeah, you have this big backpack with fluid in it and like a sprayer kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's what I would envision a deep clean looks like, but I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, so what that is, and you see it, I've seen it a bit even on the news lately when they show some people getting off planes from China and they're even spraying.
Yes, that's what
people.
We're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what these are, you know, if it's this bright green backpack, it's an electrostatic backpack. So what it's doing, it's putting electrostatic charge on whatever chemical you're spraying through there. So any surface you have of a building is going to already be a negative or neutral charge. And this is putting a positive on it, which pretty much makes it magnetic. So we spray a disinfectant through there. It's a real fine mist, and it's going to pull into any surface that it's sprayed near. So we've been doing that for schools, where we'll go in and we spray every wall, every table, pretty much every surface of that building we can get close to. We're spraying it down with that disinfectant.
I know health officials are saying a lot of the places people are still texting us, too. Thank you, 773 gas pump. We got a number of people reminding us that the gas pump is often touched and a lot of germs are there. And how often does that get cleaned? Probably never. So you wonder about, it's okay to take a napkin or something else to put over your hand, to open a handle, to open the things that are normally touched by a lot of people. That's okay.
Yeah.
That's recommended even, in fact, because I'd imagine that's a place where you're finding a lot of germs on handles.
It is. I mean, like you went through a little bit before the break, but anywhere where people are touching a lot, you know, even if we come in and disinfect it last night, if someone with the flu comes in today, sneezes on their hand, touches the button, you're going to have fresh germs there. So you do want to be protecting yourself. You want to be washing your hands before you touch your mouth, in case you did touch it. But like you said, a good idea is a paper towel, Kleenex, something else to touch those buttons.
Fridge handle, another one. So when you deep clean, you go in, you get the microwave handle, you get the fridge handle, all the buttons and things that everybody's touching. That's what you do. It's part of it.
Right. And it's part of our recurring work scopes, too, in an office. I mean, you want to make sure you're getting those things regularly, that you're, you know, in some accounts that's daily. If they have less of a budget, it might be weekly, but it's something definitely companies should think about, you know, allocating more resources to the cleaning.
Yeah. Do you, Rich, find that most, in general, we're not going to talk about yours, but in general, would you say a general cleaning at most offices and public buildings would include handles?
Or
you do think so?
Yeah, and touch points. I mean, it should. It should be part of that work scope.
That is part of the normal kind of thing, although they get repopulated with germs pretty quickly. So it's, again, it's something else.
That's why you still want to be washing your hands.
Yes, you do. And then when you put the black light over things, and you've done this, I've grossed out when I see this, but where do you find a lot of the germs that people may not expect? You said the handles, the door handles, those kinds of things, elevator buttons. Anywhere else?
I mean, you said that you wouldn't expect. I mean, so in the bathrooms, obviously, you find a lot. But
bathrooms are true to their name. We expect them to be there, and they're there.
Right. Otherwise, no. I mean, kind of the places you've identified, you know, those coffee machines, door handles, light switches, microwaves, you know, just to think about anywhere where people are touching during the day. That's where you're going to find the germ buildup.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then your backpack that you bring in, that's part of the deep clean, and you go and you spray everything, and that sort of does it leave a coating on surfaces?
No.
Or it kind of interacts with what's there?
Yeah, so it's a good question. So it's it's spraying a liquid on there. But to that point, most disinfectants, to make sure you're actually disinfecting, I don't know how many people read the label, the majority of them need a dwell time. So that, you know, they'll say that they can kill the different flus, sometimes different coronaviruses, all those things, mm-hmm. but they need to dwell for 10 minutes. So a lot of times, a lot of them don't need to be wiped. You know, the one we're using, you don't have to come back and wipe it. So we spray it, we leave it wet. It gives it that dwell time to make sure it's killing the germs. But just as a general matter, that's something people should be aware of when they're trying to disinfect something. Make sure you're actually paying attention to how long it needs to sit on that surface. Because if you spray it, wipe it dry right away, it may not be killing the germs you think it is.
Clorox and Lysol, two popular products, so many of them out there. There's a story I saw today about whether or not they're able to help in this case, because they do advertise we kill 99.9% of bacteria and viruses. What about this particular coronavirus? A lot of people curious about that. Do you find it to be effective?
Well, so
from what you've seen?
Yeah, we don't use those two products, but I can tell you in general, there's what you're going to find is there's nothing actually tested right now. No cleaning company can make a claim that I'm aware of to say that their product kills this strand of coronavirus. Mm-hmm. But there are products that kill other strands of coronavirus and products that are rated to clean emerging viruses. So the product we're using, you know, when we're spraying this is rated to kill emergent pathogens. It does kill other strands of coronaviruses. So, you know, there's a thought out there that these things are effective against coronavirus.
Because it says on the packaging, but they don't know about this particular strain. So when you say, oh, it kills coronavirus, it's possible and it may be even likely, but we don't know for sure.
Exactly.
And I guess the EPA says companies can apply for that emerging pathogens claim so that they can actually post, hey, we are effective against this. So that's the kind of thing those companies will be looking for.
Correct.
I am sure. Anything else to know, Rich? About cleaning? Because people are all thinking about cleaning right now.
Yeah,
we're all thinking about washing our hands. We're doing everything we can to prevent the spread of everything, and flu being the number one thing. But it's top of mind for sure.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think the most important thing, continue to wash your hands, continue to, you know, be cognizant of what you're touching. You know, we're there trying to help every night get it clean. But if someone comes back in and puts new germs out, that's where you got to be thinking about it yourself.
And stay home from work if you can, and you're sick, you're showing symptoms of like the flu or anything, a cold, something like that. That's the way to stop it. The spread. Thank you, Rich. Rich Kirkowski, Stratus Building Solutions is where you find you. Thanks for weighing in today.
Yeah,
thanks
thank
for talking
you.
To us. We've got more to come here on WGN Radio. Stay with us because the doctor is here. He's a pulmonologist and critical care specialist at Northwestern. He'll answer your questions about coronavirus and the flu. Again, a very particularly hard hit year for us here, season, I should say, in Illinois for the flu. So we're going to talk about that. And he'll just talk about the recent cases and bring us up to speed on all that sort of stuff. So stay with us here on WGN. One 32 here on WGN, Monday afternoon. It's Anna DeVlantis, 630. We've been talking about the germiest places, and 630 says, what about restaurant menus? Ick. How often do those get cleaned? And a lot of people voting for elevator buttons is one of the germiest places in their office. So keep them coming. We're just talking about the places to remember that we have to clean and use our Clorox wipes or whatever it is you do. You just sort of we're thinking about cleanliness at a time like this. Dr. Ben Singer, pulmonologist and critical care doctor at Northwestern Memorial Hospital, is joining us because we also want to talk about the coronavirus fourth case and third case being announced, plus the flu and how that is hitting us particularly hard here in Illinois. Dr. Singer, thanks for joining us. Thanks for being on WGN.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So I guess we hear about the third and fourth case today, a husband and wife in their 70s. The first and second case in Illinois, worth noting, they both made a full recovery. Now we have the third and fourth case today. What should we know about this? Anything that strikes you?
I think the thing we're concerned about in the healthcare community and the scientific community is this idea of the virus spreading in the community. So not spreading directly from people who have traveled to areas that are the hotspots, like China, but people acquiring the virus and having it spread locally. And over the next few days to weeks, we'll see if that's occurring or not.
And so with them, do we know anything more? Does the health community know anything more about whether they did travel to China or they had any kind of access or exposure to somebody who did go to an affected area?
So I'm not privy to those facts specifically. I know that the hospital has put out press releases with more information.
Okay, so we'll wait. I know that Steve Bertrand told us there's some kind of a news conference later today at some point pretty soon, I understand.
Yeah, the hospital has one going on, and then the governor's going to speak about 2:30 as well.
Okay, so maybe we'll have some more facts about that.
If I can just interject a little bit, one of the concerns here, and I'm looking at a story out of Washington State where three more people have died, but it's the healthcare workers there, they say, who I think there are 50 healthcare workers who may have the virus.
Yes, so that's a concern, is the healthcare workers who care for patients with coronavirus and protecting them, because of course they have to go on to care for other people, and certainly we don't want healthcare professionals shedding the virus and infecting their patients, and that's why we have been trained and are skilled at using protective equipment to try to limit that exposure and limit that transmission as much as possible so that we can protect our healthcare workers.
Yeah, I mean, and the nice part about that is that in the healthcare industry, you're well-versed about that kind of thing. Isn't that sort of normal protocol?
It is. It's normal protocol for taking care of patients with a number of different types of infections. That's right.
So is there any more you can glean from the numbers as we see cases around the world and understand, is there anything about demographics that are particularly hard hit or who it might be impacting hardest or worse when whoever gets the coronavirus? Is it older adults? What are you seeing, Dr. Singer?
Yeah, it tends to be what we've seen with influenza over the years, which is that people who are older or have problems with their immune system, they have a compromised immune system for whatever reason, tend to be the people who get the most severe illness and are more likely to suffer ill effects from it.
Except in this case, I was reading something. I want to ask you about it because I saw that children, for whatever reason, are finding in the cases they've seen so far around the world that they are somehow not showing as severe symptoms as the adults or older adults who are also testing positive for the coronavirus.
Yeah, there have been some suggestions that that's true. The data are still coming in, though. I don't know that that's an absolute proven fact. Of course, we'd like that to be true.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, so I suppose it would be a good thing. And then the other thing I constantly hear people ask, is it like the flu? Do we know that yet in terms of by spring or early summer that the cases really wind down, even though it's always present, the flu, you can always get the flu, but that time of year we see a sharp drop-off in the number of people who are actually getting it and passing it to others.
Right. Thank you for the question. The normal course of a lot of respiratory viruses is that they do wane as the warmer weather comes. There are notable exceptions, though, when there are pandemics. In other words, the virus spreading in multiple places throughout the world, it can kind of break that rule. And so that's why, while we certainly hope that the warmer weather and the coming spring will track with the waning of coronavirus cases, we want to be prepared that that won't happen and that these could continue through the spring into the summer.
What is it in the healthcare community now that you're being told about in terms of what to expect and how to take sort of preparatory measures at this point, knowing that you're kind of on alert for more cases potentially? What is it you all are doing?
We very much follow the CDC guidance. The CDC are a tremendous group of experts who are very thoughtful and really, really know the data quite well to provide their recommendations. And so what we're doing is following their guidance about who to identify as people at risk, or what they refer to as persons under investigation, really people of interest. And those are people who have fever, cough, shortness of breath, who have either traveled to one of these hotspots, have contacted someone with a known or suspected coronavirus infection, or who become very, very sick with those symptoms, usually in an ICU, and we don't have any other reason for it, like influenza or another pneumonia.
Yeah, in the Arlington Heights case, I did think that they were taking, you know, very extreme cautionary measures, and probably I understand why they were doing that even the family members who were near somebody who was diagnosed were automatically self-quarantined, told to stay home until they could figure out whether or not they tested positive for the coronavirus. They're trying to just see who had contact with every person, and in the healthcare community, you go around and you find out, hey, just as a precaution until we get your test results back, we'd like you to self-quarantine.
That's right. And that's really been the strategy, is to identify people at highest risk, those that have had close contact, again, with people who have proven or presumptive coronavirus infection, and really keep a close eye on them, ask them to monitor their symptoms, and like you said, self-quarantine to try to prevent the spread in the community.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing, and I think that it is the right thing. And you know, they certainly seem as if they have a handle on things and are looking ahead to next steps, which is what you have to do without panicking or being, you know, crazy about this kind of thing. Because again, right, let's talk about the flu a little bit, because Dr. Singer, we have been hard hit here in Illinois, and it's a fact that goes a little bit underreported, I think, because of the maybe even perhaps overreporting of the coronavirus and all of the issues around it. I understand why, but the flu has been, it's been a particularly tough season for us.
That's right. I think the latest numbers are well over 30 million cases of flu in the United States, close to 20,000 deaths, and the flu is a very real phenomenon. But I think you're right, because flu is always with us, it's something that we're at least familiar with. I think the coronavirus gets a lot of attention, as it should, as we try to contain all of these outbreaks. But the flu is still a major concern and something that that we deal with frequently.
Yeah, end of February, I saw some data from the Illinois Department of Public Health. The flu continues to be a major problem locally, flu being categorized as a quote-unquote widespread issue throughout the state. And the number of pediatric flu-related deaths in Illinois spiked in just 1 month, something else that is concerning.
Correct.
Is it a difficult, is it an extreme strain of the flu, or is something about this characteristic that is causing that kind of an issue? I just wonder why that's happening.
So there are many different types of flu that can circulate from year to year, and the degree to which the flu can really cause that kind of community impact, affect children, or even otherwise healthy persons can vary from year to year. You probably remember the 2009 swine flu outbreak, where there were a number of healthy young people who were getting quite sick. And so from any year to year, we can see that. That's right.
Dr. Singer, I just want to ask you finally here. We have a great healthcare system in America, certainly in Illinois, in Cook County, in Chicago. We're very fortunate in that respect, because I know that the fatality rates go up depending on that particular issue. That is one of the main factors, whether you're in a third world country or an area where you may not have access to healthcare, that can be an issue when you're trying to deal with the coronavirus or the flu.
That's right. And I'm very, very proud to practice medicine in the United States, where we have one of the most sophisticated, not just clinical, but scientific enterprises. And while these viral infections can be quite bad and quite devastating for a number of patients and their families, I certainly think we are in good shape to be prepared.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Ben Singer. We appreciate you calling in to WGN Radio today. Pulmonologist, critical care doctor. He's at Northwestern Memorial Hospital. Thanks for joining us, Doc.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Much more ahead here on WGN Radio. 1:42 is the time. We're going to take a break from the coronavirus and the germ issue, even though we're getting a lot of texts, so keep them coming, about how you clean where the germiest places are in our environment, just to keep them on our radar. But we're going to talk about bullying with a woman who was bullied herself. Her daughter was bullied, and she's now written a critically acclaimed and best-selling book about bullying. She's a local mom. We'll hear from her next. Hey, it's my turn. 1:44 is the time. I am excited about our next guest, and we've been trying to arrange to get you on the air for a little while, and I'm happy she's here. Lori Orlinsky is her name. She's a local mom, now author, best-selling book about bullying, and her daughter, Haley, was bullied. Lori was bullied, too, and you have a great story to tell. You've turned what's happened to you into something that helps others, and I want to talk. Thanks for being here, Lori.
Thanks so much for having me.
I think it's something that you don't hear all the time, but it's an important thing. Like, so you were bullied, and then Haley was bullied. Was it over the same kind of thing, or what's going on there?
It was. So I was always the shortest one growing up. I'm only 5'2 right now, maybe on a good day, probably really like 5 feet or 5'1, depending on my length of my height of my heels. But it never bothered me to the extent that it bothered Haley. And when Haley was 3 years old, she came home from preschool crying. Her teachers had hung up a growth chart in the classroom. And while Haley's names were all the way at the top in the middle, Haley, what happened?
Sorry, Haley, we got to turn up your mic. Go ahead. What'd you say, Haley?
My name is already at the bottom.
And so yours is already at the bottom.
Her name was all the way at the bottom. And so it made her feel really sad and lonely. And not only that, but because her name was at the bottom, she felt like she was the worst. Because when you're a kid, you're used to, you know, things being associated with the best at the top. And so every day she came into that classroom when they hung up a growth chart and she saw her name at the bottom and felt discouraged.
I see. So, and then that was not a fun thing, right, Haley?
No, it wasn't at all.
And then did your friends after that make fun of you? Is that what happened?
Yeah, they were calling me like different names, like Sortie, Peanut, Munchkin, names like that.
Oh, and how did that make you feel?
It made me feel really sad.
Oh, so she came home one day, Lori, and talked to you about it.
She came home.
I'm assuming, right? That's what kids do when they're hurt, hopefully. They talk to their parents.
She did. She talked to me about it, and I was surprised that it was resonating so deeply with her. And so the first thing I did was go on Amazon and try and find a book about short kids. And I literally typed it in and found nothing. I couldn't believe it because I wanted to find something where I can say this child is short, but they've come out on the other side. And so now that was my aha moment and my inspiration to write the book. And so now she is the girl in the book that hopefully other parents can look to and say, this girl made these choices. Maybe you can follow in her footsteps.
Haley, did you ever talk to your teachers or your class or anything and try to tell them that, you know, I'm small, but that's who I am? And you know, did you ever, or were you too afraid to do that?
I was like sometimes too afraid, but I tried, but I just didn't want to like get like more people make fun of me.
Make them pick on you more. I know that's always the fear, right?
She didn't want to bring too much attention to it. Exactly. And you know, her teachers, I mean, they were really nice about it, but they nicknamed her Little Bug and Little Peanut, and she would just say, I just want to be known as Haley. I don't want to be the short kid.
Right. And so, I'm sure they meant it in an affectionate way.
Definitely.
You don't always know. I mean, the one thing I hear, Lori, all the time from listeners when bullying comes up is that it's always happened. And that it's kind of one of those things that kids do. When it crosses the line, you need to do something about it. But you can't, how do you ever eliminate all bullying in a class, in a school, in a kid environment at all? It seems impossible.
Exactly. And these were microaggressions, so it wasn't full-blown bullying because the kids were so young, but it had the potential to turn into that. And so what I wanted out of this book is I wanted it to show kids the perspective on the power of their words. So when kids call Haley Munchkin and Peanut, even though they're doing it to be silly and sweet, they see that their words hold power on others. And also, I wanted it to give kids a sense of self-confidence because it's, yes, this book is about being short, but you could take the word short out and you can sub it for skin color, for sexuality, for large features, for small features. Being small is just the one that worked for us. But I'm hearing from a lot of parents that it really helps with bullying prevention. And I think Haley is much more empathetic now.
Because it does. Bullying can take on even much more extreme measures. You hear about it all the time. And it really can be devastating to a teenager, to a pre-teenager, or even a child as young as Haley is. It can be a really awful, awful thing. But this is smaller, but it feels as if you just want to start conversations and make kids be happy with who they are. That's a great message for 7 and 8 year olds, right? You want to be happy with who you are.
Absolutely. And reading is also so important for kids because instead of sitting your child down and making them feel like they're in trouble and saying, we need to talk about bullying, if you read them a book and don't tell them what it's about and then you discuss what happened in the book, it kind of leads to a natural conversation about bullying. And so it feels less forced and more natural for kids.
What's the reaction you're getting, Lori, from this book?
I'm getting a lot of people that tell me their own stories. A lot of kids that are taller or that have parents with taller kids, they say to me, you know what? My kids get picked on too because they come with the expectation that they're smarter because they look older and that they're more athletic because they're taller. And so people are using this book in different ways to help them overcome what they deem as obstacles to themselves.
I think, the other thing that is taken, we talk about this in more extreme ways about kids who have been bullied to the point of just having to go through therapy or have issues with not wanting to go to school, staying home. You know, it gets to a point where it becomes difficult to face because the bullying might be physically threatening or it might take on some kind of way that mentally really is just affecting them. And when you look at the world that's ahead for Haley, and Haley's so young, and she's, you know, you were able to combat this through the help with your teachers and your friends at school, and it's being short is an awesome thing, and just that's who she is, and that's an awesome thing to celebrate. But I think when you look at the access to online bullying, that takes on a whole new sort of, it's a new chapter, because most of us didn't grow up as parents. We didn't grow up with the online element, and kids can be online and see things and be told things and be interacted with in a way that no matter how much you're looking at what your kid's doing, especially in the teenage years, you're not going to be able to monitor everything, and you're not going to necessarily know what impacts them the most. Opening up good communication lines with your kid is important. That's what we always talk about. But it feels as if it just takes on a whole new level when you can go online and no adults are around, no parents are around. I think that's what we miss as a generation, because I feel like, yes, kids do bully. They do pick on each other. They picked on me. People were picking on each other all the time. It happens. But it does reach a certain level. And I think as parents, you got to kind of be aware of when it crosses the line.
Absolutely. And I think if we can also train our kids early to be empathetic, and Haley is the first person to step up to the plate when someone else is being bullied or being picked on because she's been there.
Mm-hmm. So do you talk to other kids now, Haley? Are you becoming a spokesperson for this?
Yeah.
You talk to your classmates or how does that go?
I've talked to my friends, like, can you please not call me these names because I don't like them.
Speak up for yourself. That's a good thing.
And we've done a couple bullying assemblies, and we go to libraries and different schools. And Haley loves to talk about how she came out on the other side of it. And mm-hmm. she felt like there was no end in sight. And now she feels like she's, you know, like exactly like you said, a spokesperson and can help kids deal with these issues of teasing and bullying.
That is awesome. Do you have any sisters or brothers, Haley?
I have one younger sister.
One younger sister. So she maybe, is she on board with this too?
She's very short as well. She's 4 years old, but she is also another small but mighty child of mine.
Good for you. Small but mighty. I like that. They're looking at also the numbers. When you look at the trend lines, they're saying that over time, the last 10 years, kids more and more are reporting higher percentages of being bullied. And some of that is because of the social media access and the access to being online and sort of that unmonitored kind of situation where anything can happen. There's, you know, you just don't know who you're interacting with or what's being said. You often hear about TikTok. We talk about that a lot here on the show. Social media platform that is the fastest growing one. It's 1.5 billion users now in just 3 years of being around. It's the social media site I always talk about that every kid 8 to 18 knows about, but very few parents know about TikTok, or really sort of it's not as well known as some of the other bigger, larger platforms that have been around for a lot longer time. And because of that, they do see more inappropriate behavior, more bullying, more sort of predatory behavior and that kind of thing. So stuff, you know, to talk about, which is what your book is about.
Right.
Talking
and
to your kid.
The latest statistics show that 160,000 children stay home from school every single day just to avoid their bullies.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can help just one kid, I think that's all we need, just to start. Just one kid, teach them empathy, teach them young, and you know, then we can hopefully raise a generation where bullying is not a problem.
Yeah, and so this is intended for, your book is called Being Small, and the full title is?
Being Small Isn't So Bad After All.
Isn't So Bad After All. Is it a rhyming book, Lori?
It is. It's a rhyming picture book.
Now, Haley, did you have a role in any of this? Did you write or do anything with the book?
I hope to, like say if I like it or not. Like, sometimes if I didn't like it, I would, like, stick my tongue out. I'll put my thumbs down. And if I liked it, I would do, like, a silly dance.
See, this is how they communicate.
She was how I learned to take constructive criticism in a very harsh way.
Oh, my gosh. I love it. She's like, Mom, that's not so good. Because kids will tell you. They tell you. They're very open about this kind of thing. They're not afraid to tell you when they don't like what Mom or Dad is doing. The bullying, you are a response. You do some kind of professionally trained to do bullying response now. So you've kind of taken this and been, it's more of a life mission for you. You're writing books, you're a mom, but you're also doing other things.
Yes, I got the certification from the CDC. It's in bullying prevention and response training. So I love to go to different schools and talk to the kids, talk to libraries, bookstores, just about the fact that all of our actions have an equal and opposite reaction, and that, you know, we need to be mindful of bullying.
Well, it's awesome what you're doing. And Haley, you too. Awesome what you're doing.
Thank you.
You're in first grade, right?
Yep.
You're liking it now? You're liking school?
I love in school.
All right. That's what you want to hear. Well, good luck with the book and good luck in school. Thank you for sharing your story here with us on WGN Radio. And the book, one more time, Lori Orlinsky, it's by you and Haley, and it's called
Being Small Isn't So Bad After All, and it is available on Amazon.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, my gosh. My pleasure. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We've got more coming up here on WGN Radio. It's 1:56 exactly, including the news at the top of the hour from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And there's a lot of news to talk about. Anna DeVlantis here on WGN. Thanks for being with us on this Monday. It's Money Monday, and we want to take a look at the big picture, look at the stock market, the economy, the Fed, much in the spotlight right now about what they may or may not do, it might do. And then the small picture, the picture that probably matters most to most of us who are investors, or you got some money in the market, maybe you got a 401k, what to do in these times and what to expect next. Here on WGN with us, respected investor himself, smart money guy, Jonathan Honig. He's a regular commentator on Fox News and Fox Business News on all things finance. He also has a new book out. It is called A New Textbook of Americanism. Hey, Jonathan, good to see you.
Oh, Anna, great to be with you. And it's, I have to say, it's a lot better to be with you today.
Yes.
With the market up 500 points than it was last week. You know, last week was the fifth worst week for the markets ever in history.
I saw the Wall Street Journal headline, $3.6 trillion wake-up call. The $3.6 trillion was slashed from the market valuations. Of course, we've had an 11-year run.
Yes, yes. And you know, it's good for you to put that in context. You know, a lot of people said, wow, that's a hell of a decline simply because of the coronavirus. But you're right. I mean, the market's basically gone straight up for the better part of 11 straight years. A lot of people saw this as an opportunity to take some of those profits. But Anna, there's no question, it wasn't just an historic decline, but the speed of it was also historic. This was the biggest 10% decline from an all-time high to a 10% decline ever. So it really was not just a massive drop, but the speed of it was also pretty head-shaking as well.
But didn't the actual percentage drop sort of compared to viruses in the news before?
Yes,
there was
virus,
a little bit of...
viruses past, yeah.
viruses past.
No, you're absolutely right. You go back to the SARS virus in 2013, the market actually fell from its peak to its trough about 14% over the course of a couple of weeks. Now, this time it happened a lot quicker. Of course, the numbers in terms of the human casualties are also a lot bigger this time around. But, you know, we've seen this story before, Anna. We've seen it before. And markets tend to be forward-looking. And as news of more exposures and more companies being affected began to grow, the market began to price in the fact that this isn't just a terrible human tragedy, but it's turning out to be a real economic tragedy as well. And that's a fact.
Well, it is a fact. I even saw in Cranes today, there was a local companies that were hit. And in the Chicago Tribune, they talked about it as well, that you even go from Walgreens to is on positive. They're positively benefiting. You can imagine why, the hand sanitizer and the face masks and all the other products that they sell. But then you look at Boeing, sure, and United and the airlines and things like that that are very hard hit right now, as you're seeing travel advisories going out and travel alerts. It's hitting it's hitting that sector.
Anything hospitality related, travel related, cruise lines. I'm glad you mentioned United, which just earlier today even was at a new 52-week low. It's had about a third of its market capitalization erased in just the last week and a half. And that's really been ground zero, exactly as you said, Anne, as the travel-related, the leisure-related stocks. They've really just taken an immense and enormous hit. But, you know, we really shouldn't be too surprised by this. I mean, given the size, you have companies big and small canceling their travel plans, canceling their conference plans, canceling their sales calls. And, you know, we'd like to think that, you know, what happens at, you know, Boeing just impacts here in America or here in Chicago. This is a global economy, an interconnected economy, and issues happening in China or Italy or anywhere else have a real major impact, not just on the American economy, but here in Chicago specifically as well.
You keep hearing about supply chain because you think of the companies that are exposed to having manufacturing, either parts or whole of whatever they produce or make, done in China, and that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
Is sort of getting shut down, if not slowed right now. Apple, of course, mentioned it, and you know, gym shoemakers or toys,
apparel.
Like 70% or 80% apparel is made,
sure,
or in some part of it assembled there. That they're being particularly hard hit. How does that change, or what are we looking for there?
Well, it's interesting. Even Coca-Cola said that their supply of sweeteners for Diet Coke could be affected because a lot of that is produced in China. It just emphasizes that that part, Anna, that we are a global interconnected economy. Now, besides the occasional, you know, shortage of hand sanitizer or face masks, as you said, there's no notice as of yet of being massive shortages of apparel, as you said. And Apple had said some of their iPhones could be affected. But, you know, we're not going to see, at least in the near term, any massive shortages of goods. But, you know, this is impacting companies. And, you know, there's estimates it could take anywhere from 0.5% to 2% off global growth. And that's why you're seeing the stock market react so violently.
You do this for a living, and you've done it for a very long time and proven success rate. So what is it you will see, you expect here in terms of the 6-month horizon and beyond?
Well, I mean, we simply don't know because this is an ongoing story. This is an ongoing event. When it comes to our own investments, Anna, and you know, said a kind of, well, what does this mean to average investors, right, everyday people? And the good news, this might sound a little backward, but the good news is that there is a lot of fear out there. There is, I mean, one of the metrics we watch, it sounds a little kind of esoteric, but it's called the VIX index. It's basically the index that demonstrates how scared are people in the marketplace. It had been very, very low for quite some time because the market had kept going up and up and up. Well, this last week, it jumped up to highs not seen since the 2008 financial crisis. So that means, at least historically, if history can be our guide, Anna, and it usually is in the stock market, that we're a lot closer to the end of this move down than the beginning, simply the fact that the markets have gotten so fearful so quickly.
Yeah. Well, what will you be watching for next? You're seeing a little correction today, could you call it?
It's a bounce, but we got to hope it's not what they say is a dead cat bounce.
You know, I don't even know what that means.
Well, that's the joke, is dead cats bounce and then they keep falling down. So we say that about them. It's not a real cat, Anna. Don't
worry. Sounds terrible. I don't like that analogy.
Hypothetical.
Not at all.
We got to hope that it's not a dead cat bounce. And you alluded to it a little bit before. I mean, all the talk now is that we're going to get an interest rate cut. The market, in fact, pricing in a near 100% of an interest rate cut.
Hold that thought, because I want to hear the comment from the president over the weekend, and I want to talk about the Friday unusual Fed move announcement.
Yes.
That's important, too. And again, this stuff is important for the overall economy, whether you have a 401k, whether you're an investor or not. What the Fed does in the future for the economy and jobs and all that kind of thing matters. So we'll be right back with Jonathan Honig coming up here on WGN Radio. Back with Jonathan Honig. You see him on Fox Business and Fox News. He's a local investment expert, hedge fund manager, and he has a new book out. It's called A New Textbook of Americanism. A New Textbook of Americanism. And that's by Jonathan Honig. And he's here with us. We want to talk about the Fed, Jonathan, because there was an announcement on Friday from the Fed that it seemed to sort of be trying to quiet fears or calm people down. And then you heard from the president over the weekend. And here is what the president had to say. Let's listen to this. I want to get your reaction.
The Fed has a massive impact. Lots of it is psychological and lots of it is fact. This is something I think they should have done even beyond this and before this, because other countries that are not as nearly as prime, we're the greatest in the world. It's our currency, everything. We have everything. We should have the lowest interest rates. We don't have the lowest interest rates. Our Fed rate is higher. You look at Germany, you look at Japan, you look at other countries. They have, many of them have negative rates. And we are not put in that position because of our Fed.
All right, Jonathan, what do you have to say about that?
Well, I'd say, for the president, be careful what you wish for. I mean, historically, what prompts a country to have ultra low interest rates is not, as the president said, because it's a prime credit. That's what you think of when, you know, you're borrowing in your mortgage, etc. Historically, you know, we see these countries that have ultra low interest rates, and Anna, it's because their economies are extraordinarily weak, very weak. I mean, Japan is probably the best example. Japan has had a moribund economy for the better part of 30 years. It's also had ultra low interest rates. And even recently, we've seen parts of Europe, like Germany, either at recession levels or beginning to slip in recession levels. Most of them have negative interest rates. They've had them for years. It hasn't helped their economies one bit. So, you know, when you see interest rates moving up, what that shows, Anna, is that there's demand for money. There's demand for credit. That actually indicates historically a very booming economy. So the president should be careful what he wishes for here. If we get these ultra low or even negative interest rates, it's a harbinger of a poor economy to come, not a strong one.
And also in some places in Europe, when you have negative interest rates, you have to pay the bank to keep your money in a savings account or a checking account. You pay them. Isn't that how that works?
Exactly.
Which is crazy to me.
You lose money as you save. So it ends up being a tax on savings, which is exactly what the economy needs right now, is savings, is investment, is the elimination of regulations, including those regulations and controls by the Federal Reserve. Exactly that intervention is what makes economy more unpredictable, more chaotic, and one of the reasons why, Anna, for me, you know, look, it comes down to your own context. You asked about what should the average investor do right now. I mean, if you're in your 20s and 30s and 40s, you've got some savings, you're not living paycheck to paycheck. I mean, blips like this, 1,000 points up or down, really don't mean anything. But there is a real possibility that we could slip into recession after an 11-year-plus historic run. That means the market might be, doesn't matter if it's down, it just might, that it might be flat for a decade or even more.
You think that that's possible, or that's one of the possibilities? Are you pointing that
out? Well, I just looked to, you know, after the tech implosion in 2000, The economy grew, but the market was basically flat from 2000 to 2012. So when it comes to our investments, Anna, I think that's what you really have to be fearful of is, you know, not necessarily the market falling off a rock once again, but that you own investments and that you're in investments that are just kind of yesterday's business. And, you know, I look to what have been the big horsemen like Apple and Microsoft, Google. Mm-hmm. They're major parts of the economy, but I think there is a real risk here that they could be basically dead money for the better part of the next couple of years.
Oh, that's interesting. You heard from, was it Goldman Sachs, say don't expect any growth this year. That seemed like a pretty, well, not a great thing to hear.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It seems...
And that's really 100% due to the virus. And that's why you asked me, Anne, is there any sign that we're coming to an end here? I mean, the story truly is ongoing. So I think all we can do as individual investors is, as we say, you know, kind of get your financial house in order. And it's so much easier to deal with these headlines. And look, they're scary headlines, you know, Dow up 100, down 1,000. Very scary in terms of, you know, kind of dealing with it. So the best thing you can do, Anna, is to put yourself on that sound financial footing, pay off your credit card debt. And if you've got 3 or 6 months worth of just your mortgage, your rent in the bank and no credit card debt, you're in better shape than, I don't know, 70 or 80% of most Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great goal for all of our listeners, no matter what, whether you've got $1,000 in your pocket or $1 million. But get your financial house in order with no credit card debt and 6 months of living expenses on the sidelines.
Yeah, it's something to aspire to. Harder to do for some than others, depending
yes.
on what you built up and if you have student loans and all the rest of that
sure.
kind
sure.
of thing.
But think about it. I mean, now is the time to do it when the economy is so good. It wasn't too long ago we were talking about unemployment 7, 8, 9%. The job market is extraordinarily strong right now. So now is the best time to try to do it to make that goal a goal for 2020.
Help us understand that, Jonathan. How does the job market get impacted by all of this, if at all?
Well, it's negatively impacted, severely negatively impacted, especially if we go into recession. It's been a great bright spot for, you know, I don't want to bring politics in here for the president, but also just for the economy writ large. There is a tremendous amount of hiring up and down the scale, Anna, and a lot of that has to do with the flexible nature of our own economy. You know, companies are not only able to lay off people, but able to hire them relatively easy. So if we get a continued decline in stock prices, if we get a move towards a recession, you're absolutely going to see unemployment get hit, probably particularly here in the Midwest, not on the coasts. And that's why, once again, not to emphasize too much, but just having that, you know, even from a psychological perspective, having the 6 months worth of living expenses just makes the volatility so much easier to deal with. And it's a great goal.
How do you know if this dip is something to buy? If that's the position you're in, you're sort of saying, I don't know, these are numbers that I would have loved to 6 months ago seen for a company. You're sounds like you don't love the tech stocks right now.
Sure.
But maybe are there others? Are there things that you would point your people in the direction of?
I think, again, it goes back to your own individual context. I mean, what's worried me this time around in this cycle is, you know, in the early 2000s, Anna, it was our homes that we were really overloading with debt. It was you know, taking out mortgages, buying, you know, speculative homes. We haven't seen that this time around, but what we have seen is really an explosion in credit card debt. And as you said, I mean, it's difficult for a lot of people to save up, you know, a couple months of mortgage payment or a rent payment. And it's a lot more difficult if you've got a credit card payment. I mean, honestly, there's no reason trying to speculate to make 8, 10, 15% in stocks if that's what you're paying to Visa every month, month after month. So it's just a great place to start. And it's one of the ways I think that people can most quickly get themselves on a strong financial
You mentioned the younger 20s and 30s and 40s. You're fine. This is a dip. It doesn't matter almost because you have a long term. Horizon,
absolutely.
But let's go to 50s and then let's go to 60s and beyond. What advice are you giving to your clients on that?
Well, I mean, I remember in the tech wreck, a lot of people in their 60s and 70s were frankly just too exposed to risk. One of the old adages when I first started getting the business, Anna, was they used to say, take your age and subtract it from 100. And that's the percentage of your portfolio that should be in risky assets, in stocks, but let's just say in risky assets. So the idea being that if you're 50 years old, you should be probably about 50% in stocks and 50% in something safe, bonds, cash, certificates of deposit, and the like. Now, thanks to 11 years of a bull market, and a lot of people have gotten a little bit more on the risk side, have taken much more risk than historically they otherwise would have. So now is a great opportunity, as you said, you know, even if you are in your 50s and 60s, to maybe move a little bit more towards the safe capital preservation side rather than the capital speculation side, as many of us have enjoyed for many number of years.
11 years. They say this is the toughest test yet for this bull market that's lasted an unprecedented period of time.
And you don't have to make it an all or none decision. In fact, I think that's what kind of messes most people up is they, you know, market goes down, they say, okay, get me out. And then it goes up, they say, okay, get me in. So they're always kind of chasing their own tail. Think of it as increments. You know, if you've got, 50% of your cash in stocks now and 50% in the sideline, if you want to add more, add 5% more, add 10% more. But don't make investing, you know, like burying a time capsule. You don't just do it once and come back a year later and see how you do. Do it incrementally. And if you're looking to get into the market, now is a great time.
So if you, let's just look best case scenario here for a second. We talked about some of the issues if the recession happens, but let's talk best case. Let's say that the coronavirus starts to stem the tide of it with the weather in spring or early summer. Let's say a vaccine is, you know, maybe or sooner on the horizon than we thought, and those kinds of things take shape. Can you see that this is just sort of a temporary kind of thing for the economy and for the markets?
I think it's what makes this, you know, game so exciting, the process of economics and the markets, Anna, is that, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. You don't even Goldman Sachs. No one truly knows what's going to happen. It's like watching a baseball game in real time and trying to decipher who's going to win day after day. So we really don't know. And the best case scenario is that we return to where we were even 2 months ago, which is the market is all-time highs. And so many of those economic numbers, you mentioned unemployment, even GDP, continuing to grow. The fact of the matter is, though, that these are the virus, the slowing economic growth in Europe, even the weak energy prices. This is another interesting area, Anna, where it's kind of a two sides of the same coin. You know, weak energy prices mean we're going to be paying a lot less at the pump. That's a positive. But again, historically, these weak energy prices have also coincided with a weaker economy. So put it all together, and it's, you know, our hope is that we'd be able to see a pretty much what they say is a V-shaped rebound, meaning we move down very quickly, but we can move up very quickly. Look, with the virus still raging, we simply don't know.
You just don't know, right? Finally here, I just want to ask any advice at all for investors who might be listening, people who are worried today, because I think there is concern and there's worry, depending on how close you are to retirement or depending if you're already retired, wherever you sit. I know these are not easy times to sit through and not look at whatever you got, or even just, you know, kind of just be concerned overall with what you see is happening.
Well, I'll quote to J.P. Morgan, who in the early 20th century was asked how to deal with the market volatility. And his answer, I think, stands the test of time, Anna. He said, sell down to the sleeping point, which basically means, you know,
allow yourself to sleep.
Yeah, build yourself a portfolio, a diversified portfolio of stocks, bonds, and cash. As we said, get rid of that credit card debt so that even if the market goes down 10 or 15%, you're not going to be losing sleep. That's a real goal for this year and beyond.
It sounds awesome. Thank you, Jonathan. We love hearing from you. Jonathan Honig is his name. He is an investment expert, and his book is called A New Textbook of Americanism. And you're the editor of this book, but you have other books.
I do, and they're all available at capitalistpig.com.
Capitalistpig.com. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your Monday. 2:29 here on WGN. Walk of Famer Andrea Darlis is here, familiar voice here on WGN Radio. We heard the news about Loyola University telling their students to come home from Italy this week. Now University of Illinois, just in the last half hour, made an announcement. She's going to tell us about it. Andrea now works at the University of Illinois. Hi, Andrea. We'll talk to her, hear what she has to say coming up here on WGN. This Monday, and look who's here in the WGN Radio studio. Someone who's been in the WGN Radio studios for many, many years before. Walk of Famer, Andrea Darlis.
How are you, Anna?
How the heck are you?
I'm doing good. The sun's shining. It's 40. I'm happy.
I know. It's, you know, there is a lot to be thankful for. Beautiful weekend, too. You are now the director of constituental
engagement. Yeah. It's a fancy
constituent
title.
You're basically Ambassador Andrea. Ambassador Andrea, that's what we call you now, because you kind of communicate with the public and the university, and you bring everybody together.
Like a little liaison.
Liaison.
You will.
I like that, too. Those are nice words.
Yeah.
I like those. So we heard today the news about Loyola University calling all students who are studying in Italy, come on home this week just as a precaution. We want you to come back, and there are cases there, and we just want everyone back home. That's what they were advising today. I know they have a very active program there in Italy. A lot of even law students go there, and throughout the university. The students speak so highly of it. I've talked to a number of them, and I talked to one professor about it too. So it's sad that they have to come home, but you get why they're doing it. They're trying to take every precaution, and with everything going on in the world. Now, today, just in the last half hour, you folks made some news at the University of Illinois.
We did. We are asking all students in South Korea now to voluntarily return to the United States. In addition to the news that you just said, Anna, that we asked all students studying abroad in Italy to return home. Again, there's about 137 U of I students in Italy studying abroad, about 15 to 20 studying in South Korea. So this is a voluntary recall, but a strong voluntary recall. And we know a lot of students are planning to go abroad for spring vacation. We're strongly encouraging people to reconsider their travel plans, especially with the latest news with coronavirus.
Does that mean overseas?
Yeah, it means overseas. And the virus, you know, I should reiterate, it has not hit the University of Illinois campus. We have right now about 5,800 students from China currently enrolled
large
at the university.
Chinese population.
Yeah, it's one of the largest in the country. So we have nearly 6,000 students who are from China studying on the U of I campus. It has no confirmed cases on the mm-hmm. University of Illinois campus, nor are there any other individuals in the U of I community under investigation from possible infections. But you know, and we talked about this too, when the virus was linked to Wuhan, China, the university did identify about 150 students from Wuhan. Again, we want to reiterate that none of these students have been infected with the virus. But those students who are returning now from Italy or Seoul, South Korea, which was the new directive today, Anna, we're asking them to, well, the CDC is asking them to self-quarantine for 14 days and then have proof of that self-quarantine before they do, in fact, return to China. And the U of I will help to accommodate travel expenses and will work with these students who are fearing of missing midterms. We will work with all of the students to obviously reschedule those. But it's a safety precaution.
Yeah,
it really is.
And I get why everyone's doing that. It seems like the right thing to do. I just wonder, it just seems like a logistical nightmare, all the things you have to think through if you have such a large Chinese population, especially if they're from Wuhan.
Yes.
They can't go home at the end of the year, I can't imagine. Or if they do, they can't return right away, I would think. And you've got admissions. You've just sent out acceptances.
Yes.
And how many of people can come and where are they coming from? Because people come from all over the world to attend University of Illinois.
Yeah.
And so many of our universities.
That's a really good point, too. So acceptance letters just went out last Friday. And this is before, obviously, the admissions process has been going on for months and months and months before the virus broke or even had an outbreak. The outbreak that it has at this level. So there's a great story today in the Inside Higher Ed website, and it was basically insidehighered.com. Will the coronavirus crisis trigger an enrollment crisis at U.S. colleges all over the country, Anna?
Sure,
so this is obviously going to be... This is going to have repercussions for not only weeks and months ahead, but perhaps in years ahead when it comes to students outside of the country enrolling in American colleges.
I know there are travel advisories out, and then there are places where there are travel sort of restrictions. So China is one of them where they're restricting some travel, and South Korea is on that list. But then you have the ones that strongly discourage from traveling. Just overall, we're not talking about universities. And Italy's on that list. Japan's on that list. Singapore, Hong Kong, Iran, and Thailand. So
yes.
Those are the places where they're kind of saying, hey, you know what? Use caution there. We really discourage you from traveling to those regions right now. So students from there, or students, I guess you wouldn't go there, but if students from there would be...
Right.
You got to figure out what to do there.
If they're coming into the United States, obviously they have to follow what the CDC is advising right now, including that self-quarantine. New escalations with the State Department today pushed it to what they're calling a level 4 avoid travel, especially for the regions that you just mentioned, China, Iran, Italy, and now the Daegu region of South Korea. And I hope I'm saying that right.
Mm-hmm.
It's Daegu.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the Daegu region of South Korea. So it seems that every day, because you and I were texting this mm-hmm. morning, and I said, oh, wait, there's going to be a new country added, which about an hour ago, the Seoul, South Korea region was added to that watch list, if you will. So it's just, it's a very scary time right now. I mean, this is really...
There's just so many things to keep track of. I mean, I just heard the Archdiocese of Joliet said, we're going to change how we do peace offerings and greet each other in church. When you turn around and you shake people's hands, they're saying we should sort of avoid that now. They're changing all kinds of hand-washing policies and communion policies and everything like that. They're taking a hard look at that. And I understand the Chicago Archdiocese may also be issuing some sort of just kind of change or advisory about the way they're doing that kind of thing. Just thinking about everybody who's in public gathering situations and try to do what's best to keep things, you know.
It's also, and I'm so, I don't know if you are too, I'm sure you are being in the business, but I'm so aware of it now. I mean, somebody just maybe clears their throat or coughs, you know, and I was at a luncheon.
So much on your mind.
Yeah, I was at a luncheon last week and we sat down. It was at the Chicago Club and I didn't know anybody at the table and we were all saying, oh, hi, nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. And I was so conscious of the handshaking right before we were going to eat. That, you know, everybody's shaking hands, which is the courteous thing to do and what you do when you first meet someone. But I guess should there be some sort of a universal, hi, nice to meet you without having to touch the person?
Yeah, you wonder if that will happen. I was just reading that the tech bros in the Silicon Valley area have issued memos to some of their companies. Mark Andreessen, who's a U of I grad, sent out some kind of memo to his company. I guess they do a lot of international sort of trade and business and meeting and greeting and that kind of thing. And he said, well, we now have a new corporate handshake. Everybody in the company should just do the elbow bump. You just go up to someone and you
boom.
Say, hey. Nice to meet you. No hands. The elbow bump.
And I'm fine with that. Your previous guest, he was so sweet. He was
Jonathan Onig. He gave us an elbow bump.
Did.
I'm like, you read that article too? He's like, yeah, I did.
Gave the elbow bump. And yeah, I just, in this day and age, although they're saying too, the CDC just said, don't buy the masks because now they're running out of the masks. And can that really protect you?
The Surgeon General even said, I don't believe in the masks are that helpful.
Yeah,
urging the public to stop buying the surgical masks. He actually put out a tweet over the weekend.
Yeah.
Seriously, people, stop buying masks from the official U.S. Surgeon General.
Yeah.
Twitter handle. They are not effective in preventing general public from catching coronavirus, he writes. But if healthcare providers can't get them to care for sick patients, it puts them and our communities at risk.
Right, right. And also, too, you know, we're talking a lot about students, and we absolutely have to take care of our students and be protective of all students studying abroad and coming into the United States and going overseas, too. But this is also faculty, staff, parents. You know, everybody should really heed all of these warnings and just be careful out there. You know, so many of these programs overseas are being canceled now, too.
Right.
So, and through the spring semester, like I said, this is going to have ramifications, not just in the days and weeks, but probably the months ahead,
mm-hmm.
at least for 2020.
Yeah, I would think, especially with such a large Chinese population at U of I, you have special concerns there because you don't want the going back and forth. And
absolutely. Absolutely.
You can't have that. And I know they have restricted them. Right?
Yeah, U of I has suspended all academic programs in China for the spring semester. And students are not being allowed to travel to China for university-related matters while these advisories are in effect. That's a level 4.
Are you washing your hands, Andrea?
I
know I am.
Oh,
probably overwashing.
I have always...
My hands are really dry now.
Mine too.
I'm always washing.
With the Purell. You know, I'm constantly... Are you doing that too? Constantly with the Purell?
I am. I don't know why, because, if this were just a really harsh flu season, which, by the way, it is in Illinois. We're having a tough flu season.
Yes.
And it's, normally, I don't know that... As many of us would be doing what we're doing, but it's good. I think the cleanliness and the hygiene and the swabbing the surfaces and just overall thinking about what you're touching and how you're kind of living your life, fine. That seems like the right thing to do. It gets in your brain. You're right, Andrea, and it's hard to get it out.
It is, absolutely. And I know these study abroad programs, not just for U of I, but for schools all over the country and specifically in Chicago and the state of Illinois. Just watch those. If your students are planning to study abroad, maybe this might not be,
this might not be the year to do it.
I wouldn't say this would be the time to do it. For sure not this semester. Perhaps put it off till the fall semester or until 2021.
Right. I suppose it depends on where you're going. But 847 says, please encourage everyone, cover your mouth and nose when coughing or sneezing.
Oh, yeah.
With your elbow. Like you kind of go into your elbow, right?
Yeah.
So you don't go on your hand and then you shake somebody's hand. I work in a public place and people walk around coughing and sneezing without covering it up. That is an important reminder. And stay home, too.
I was just going to say, stay home. I know. You get sick days for a reason.
Right. Well, and I think I just talked to a friend of mine who is a general manager of a restaurant, and he said in the service industry, I tell my workers, hey, stay home. You're touching food. That's important. But he says some people feel like, you know, they don't have enough sick time, or they don't have, you know, the time, and they still come to work. And that's a sad thing. But it's not worth it. Not worth it to infect other people.
Very true.
We have more to come here with Andrea. Can you stick around for
some time? I can, yeah,
sure. Right. Andrea Darlis is with us here on WGN Radio. More to come, including some stories in the news, some things to talk about. And Tom Skilling, he's going in for surgery. He's going to be okay. Gastric bypass surgery.
He's
on our thoughts.
Can I just tell you, I saw him last week. He is one of the most positive, nicest human beings alive, Tom Skilling.
How about it?
And he's, you know, he's nervous about the surgery, but he's going to do great. It's literally really a lifestyle change. And he said, you know what, I don't want to worry about having a heart attack all the time.
Yeah,
said, you're gonna be just fine, Tom. Everybody loves him.
One of the topics we'll be talking about coming up here, 2:43, 2:46. Someone was asking, Andrea Darlis is here, WGN Walk of Famer. She now works at U of I as an ambassador. That's what I call her. But
thank you, Anna.
If you have an official title, that's more of a liaison from community relations kind of thing. Someone had asked here, we have a listener who asked, if you're in Italy and you're a student, because we're calling people back,
yes,
students that are studying abroad right now, mm-hmm, if you come back, do you lose a semester?
Great question, and the answer is no. There's 137 students in Italy that are currently studying abroad, 15 to 20 in South Korea, and they're being told to come back to the United States. They will have to self-quarantine for 14 days. However, the university will help to accommodate a lot of the travel expenses, and will work with each individual college. And when I say that, I mean like liberal arts, business, engineering, whatever their major is, to help with midterms and rescheduling so they do not miss schooling and they do not lose credit.
That's a good thing. 708, I work in a local hospital. We can't get masks for two reasons. People buying the current stock, and also they're also often produced in China. So production and shipments have ceased for now. So that's why you heard the Surgeon General talk about it. We said the tech bros in Silicon Valley are doing the elbow bump. That was the official memo that went out at some tech companies to tell people that's how you greet people now, no handshake. And then here's 630. I was going to suggest the elbow bump followed by bringing back the side hip bump from the 70s. Hey,
yeah, there's got to be another way.
You cough into your elbow, so really the elbow bump might not be a good idea.
We had a texter talk about that because they were almost back-to-back texts like, oh, well, just remind everybody to sneeze or cough into the crease of your elbow. But then if your elbow bumping, does that, I don't know, then maybe that's not the answer.
Exactly. We were saying, Lauren, there has to be an easier way to say hello and do the greeting without physically.
What about just the nod, the good old-fashioned nod, or like hold your hand up like a wave, like, hi, hey, nice to meet you.
We had a listener say the gun.
Hey, finger guns. Yeah,
I don't love the gun, but that might work. It just depends on your personality. And certain personalities can get away, I think, with the gun.
Well, you're right. You kind of have to do the noise and the wink with it, or else it just doesn't work.
And take a step backward, too, like the...
Hey, at the water cooler. How are ya?
Very funsy.
Do as the Asians do when they greet, just bow. 708.
Bow. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Very true.
Yeah. Here's somebody, 703. I work for a living. I don't get sick days. See, that's one of the issues. You know, people are just like, I lose my paycheck if I don't go in. That is an issue. Then we have other people talking about surfaces that they're cleaning, because we were talking about doing a deep clean earlier in the show and how Lysol and Clorox advertise on the back of them that they can wipe out the coronavirus, they don't know about this particular strain just yet. They say it can't hurt to do it. It may be effective is what we're hearing from the doctors at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. They're talking about this. They took a look at it and they say, we know that viruses that lack an envelope coating are much hardier in this environment, but many of these can be effective on the coronavirus.
And if there's any doubt, I mean, again, with the excessive hand washing, you have to do it. You have to use the Purell. If there's any doubt, see the doctor.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I have a friend who just experienced some flu-like symptoms. It turns out she had the flu. Not the coronavirus, but went to the doctor and he said no.
I say call your doctor first, because if you're in an emergency room or something like that,
absolutely,
you can infect other people and
absolutely
try to figure out before you go there.
Use the common sense.
Some other stuff that's going on. Bears expected to add a veteran quarterback, sources say. Mitch Trubisky is the Chicago Bears starting quarterback in 2020, but they plan to bring a backup veteran. Who could it be? I don't know.
Mm. Yeah, there's been talk about Andy Dalton. There were a few whispers about Derek Carr, among others. And, you know, just kind of talking about it with some of the people around here, including, you know, Adam Hoge, our expert over here.
Bears insider.
Right. You know, the thought is, hey, that's great. But at the same time, what is the point of still bringing a veteran who is kind of subpar, not going to be the long-term answer? But maybe, hey, maybe the idea is someone that can really help teach Mitch a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Knowing Anna, like we
Tom
know,
Brady?
I knew it.
Were you thinking
I was
Tom Brady?
As soon as she said no NFL quarterback,
well, why wouldn't
I thought,
it be Tom Brady?
Yeah, Tom Brady.
They're just not going to spend the money. There's no way.
How do you know?
I just have a really bad feeling.
She actually knows sports.
Wrong audience,
but I'm still going to say she's wrong.
Wrong
so,
audience.
Sorry. Not ready to hear that. Okay, so Kazimierz Pulaski Day, the Polish Museum wants you to know it's open, and you can stop by there if you want to celebrate that kind of thing and learn more about his contributions in fighting for freedom in both Poland and America and the ties between both countries. So that's happening. Then, did you hear this? Judge Judy ending after 25 seasons.
Oh, no.
She's parting ways with CBS after a 25-year-long marriage. She's so successful. It's still one of the most watched shows on television, daytime television, 9 million viewers a day when you take into account everything. TV's most watched court show. She makes... Take a little guess. How much?
10
a
million.
Year?
I don't even want to know.
Go
it's
ahead,
probably
Lauren.
Grossly large. I would say around 15 million. Yeah.
47 million a year.
Oh, my God.
Are you serious?
The highest paid personality on television. She earns 47 million bucks a year.
Wow.
Judge Judy.
I could do that.
No
Come
kidding.
On,
she just
That's
yells at people.
Yeah, just yell and make a decision.
But I guess she's planning on a new show. That's going to be picked up elsewhere. So that's not a total end if you want to get your fix of the Judge Judy. It's going to be called Judy Justice.
Ah.
I was going to say, how is it any different?
I imagine that's going to be very much the same. I wonder if she'll be... I think she's going to be paid even more for this because she's going to own the show.
Oh, there you go. Taking a page out of the Oprah playbook.
That's right. Didn't Oprah do that?
Yeah.
She
bought the network.
She did. Yeah. So that's happening.
Good for her.
This little nugget, David Byrne performs Talking Heads classic Once in a Lifetime on SNL.
Yeah.
That was a great episode.
It was very good.
Did you see it?
I did.
Here, we have some audio from it. I did not see it.
It was good.
I wanted to see if we can get...
You may find yourself living in a shotgun shack. In another part of the world, you may find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile. You may find yourself.
All right, that's a little taste. It's a great song.
It's one of those songs everyone knows. You might not know who sings it, and you might not know David Byrne, but then you're like, oh yeah.
I know that song. So your generation knows that song, too.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay.
I would hope so, at least.
Love Talking Heads.
Yes.
Weren't they great?
They were. They were awesome.
God.
Polar Plunge, I did not make it out there, but I saw the video. It looked like a ton of fun. A lot of people were out there.
Did Al Roker do it this year?
Al Roker did it from the Today Show. We
have
had
you
some Chicago Fire and Chicago Med guys and women out there.
Have you ever done it?
No.
I did it 1 year for Rags of Honor and Wounded Warriors, and I'm so happy I did it for them. We raised a great amount of money and for Special Olympics, but oh my God, I thought it was one of those freezing cold days. It wasn't like, oh, it's warmer in the water than it is outside. No, it was frigid. It took me like 10 cups of coffee and probably 6 hours to feel normal again.
Why do they look so happy when they're in the water?
Because they know they're going to get out quickly. And here's the worst part. You have to wear shoes when you do the polar plunge.
Oh, hard to move. You move slower.
Yeah, exactly, because your feet get
That's
all
That's why they always look like they have lead on their legs when they're trying to get out.
Well, and it's so cold. I've been in just 50 or 45 degree water, and it's so cold that your body tenses up so fast.
It's
hard to move.
Yes.
It's painful.
And it's hard to breathe.
I'm very scared.
After.
Yeah. It's hard to breathe. Oh, yeah.
Again, we raised a great amount of money, and I'm so happy that we did it. But
I'm thankful for all of the people that do contribute.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
$2 million. How about that? They raised $2 million for Special Olympics and the charities related to Special Olympics. And that's a pretty big number. I think there's a threshold. You have to raise at least $200 in order to participate. So it's a huge fundraiser, and it looks like
it's, you know what? Honestly,
like fun.
It's fun to do, to say, you know what? I've done it.
You've done it. And there's a lot of people there. So you're doing it with this group.
Tons and tons and tons of people. But next time, I think I'll just write a big check.
Okay. I was going to say, would you do
write
it again?
A big check. If you did it with me.
Maybe next year, Andrea. You're on.
Yeah, right. That's a lie, but I love you.
708, so. We could just give people the peace sign when we meet them. How about just hello, someone else says.
There you go. Hey, I'm fine with that.
Okay, just say hello. And then, but people, when they put their hand out, it can be awkward, right? If you just don't
I know. Just always be carrying something.
Yeah.
And then you have an excuse.
There you go, right.
Like what? What are you carrying?
Sorry,
cookies.
Books? I don't know.
Books?
Food.
Okay. Just have something in your hands.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm fine with that.
Love the advice. This is all fun stuff to consider. So thanks for weighing in on it on the text line. And it is 2:55 exactly. We have to find out what Ro Khan is doing today. And he's coming up here on WGN at the top of the hour after the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.